Tripod New Orleans at 300 returns with this story that plots points on the map of the domestic slave trade in New Orleans. Producer Lane Kaplan-Levinson visited physical landmarks that bear witness to the city's role in this national economy.
This is Tripod New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson. I'm about to incriminate a lot of people. I don't know if you know this, but there are some hotels in the French Quarter and CBD that have rooftop pools. If you do know this, you do one of two things. You recognize that you're not a guest at that hotel, and you do not go swimming in that pool. Or you realize that it's not difficult to walk through the lobby, take the elevator to the roof, and spend the day poolside free of charge. A lot of people choose option B, and they do it at the Omni Orleans on Charters and St. Louis Streets. Okay, I don't condone this, but full disclosure, I swam there myself. I even took my mom there when she visited New Orleans. But you know what I didn't know? I didn't know that before the Omni Hotel, there was the St. Louis Hotel. And I didn't know they sold slaves there.
We're right now standing in front of the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel, which was constructed in the 1950s on the site that has the longest lineage in the history of the domestic slave trade here in New Orleans.
This is historian and curator Erin Greenwald, who works at the Historic New Orleans Collection. She's taking me on a tour of slave auction sites in and around the French Quarter, a tour that doesn't formally exist.
People were not only bought and sold, rather they were sold under the domed rotunda of a fabulously decked out hotel. There wasn't anywhere else in the country where human beings, men, women, and children, were bought and sold in such luxurious environs.
We're talking about the domestic slave trade.
What that means is sales and movements of peoples within the borders of the United States.
In 1808, the federal government ended the transatlantic and international slave trade, which meant no more shipments of the enslaved from the Caribbean or Africa. Just a few years before that, the Louisiana Purchase opened up all this new land. So as the international slave trade is abolished, there's simultaneously this huge demand for labor in the Deep South.
So when this 1808 law passes, you start seeing this stream and then outpouring of people being forcibly moved from the upper to the lower South, and New Orleans becomes the nexus of that trade. It is the largest slave market in America during the antebellum period.
Close to 1 million people make up this forced migration that occurred within the U.S. in the first half of the 19th century. They came down south by boat, by rail, by stagecoach, and the most unfortunate marched for months from Virginia down the Natchez Trace. The impact goes way beyond those who were bought and sold. Erin gives the example of a single slave ship.
You know, you have a manifest of 110 people on board a ship coming from Baltimore. 110 people whose lives are forever changed, and then consider all of the people related to those 110 who are left behind and what that kind of single document represents in the larger story of the devastation of communities throughout the Upper South.
Yeah.
That the slave trade caught a lot of people up in its web, and that web destroyed tens of thousands and millions of people's lives and communities.
Once they arrived in New Orleans, many that came by boat were sold before even walking off the deck of the ship. But most people were brought to what's called a slave pen. Erin and I walked down Charter Street away from where the St. Louis Hotel stood to visit what used to be one of these pens. You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson. In 1829, it became illegal for slave traders to house slaves in the French Quarter. So these pens popped up on the borders.
And that's where we're going right now, is this cluster that's just across Esplanade, so no longer in the Quarter, technically in the Marigny, of slave pens.
We arrive at the corner of Charters and Esplanade, where there now sits a residential home built well after the Civil War.
But this is the site of a slave pen with traders' residence, showroom like you would have at an auto dealership and then the yard where enslaved people would sleep and exercise and cook.
These pens were basically jails, but then, as Aaron puts it, they were also like dealerships. And the eating well and the physical activity was also that the trader could sell their property, humans, at the highest possible profit.
A planter would come in with a shopping list. He would meet with the trader, and then he would have the individuals in their new clothes line up, and the planter would come and examine and question the individuals that were prospective purchases.
Hanging out for a while on the corner there, I realized there was no plaque on the wall that surrounds the property. You've seen historic plaques around the city, right? Like the one on Press Street that honors where Homer Plessy walked into the whites-only train car, for example. Or the one that commemorates the St. Charles streetcar line in Lee Circle. Or 100 other examples. Well, there are 52 places in New Orleans where slaves were sold. And of those 52...
There are two signs in the city of New Orleans that deal with the slave trade. The official signage is on the west bank of the Mississippi River in today's Algiers Point along the levee, and it recognizes that location's role in the transatlantic slave trade. On this side of the river, there is one plaque. It's on the side of Maspero's restaurant. Unfortunately, that signage is not correct.
The sign claims that Maspero's restaurant was the site of Maspero's exchange, but that was actually across the street where the St. Louis Hotel stood. So of the 52 sites on the East Bank, only one is marked, and it's wrong. The house we were standing in front of is a private residence, but Aaron says there are many options for marking things.
I think there are plenty of signs in other areas of the city on what are private residences that deal with topics that are easier to digest. So no, I don't know that that's the reason, because there certainly could be something, you know, right here, when you look at the map of this area, this whole block was home to slave traders and slave pens. So if the city were interested in marking that trade, they certainly could put something in the neutral ground here on Esplanade Avenue.
And yet there is no such sign. So why not?
It's much easier for people to get behind celebratory history than it is this kind of dark and extremely painful history.
A few museums have popped up, like the Whitney Plantation, devoted entirely to slavery in the South. And there are civil rights museums around the country. But there's a difference between experiencing a public marker and a museum. One's voluntary.
The only people that are seeing what's in the civil rights museum are the people that are going to the civil rights museum.
Yeah.
As opposed to the tourist from Alabama who's walking through the French Quarter.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Aaron says even places that do give guided tours are leaving this stuff out.
This is something that should happen. We should be recognizing all of our history, not simply the parts that look nice for tourists. This is who we are.
Imagine a plaque outside the Omni Hotel, acknowledging the history of slave auctions on site, and whether locals would still sneak in to take a dip. If there were 50 other plaques downtown to mark these places of the slave trade, imagine what else we might think about. Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and I'll tripod you later.